Blog Talk Radio.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Thursday, October the 18th. Today we'll be chatting with our friend George Rodriguez down in San Antonio. George had the good fortune of catching, in person, the debate between Robert O'Rourke and Ted Cruz. And he's going to give us a ringside account of what happened in that room. I don't remember the last time I attended a debate like this. It's been a while, to say the least. It must be fun to be at one of these debates. I'm sure George will bring us up to date on that. We're also going to talk a little bit about this march headed to the United States, which apparently, if I understand the news correctly, the march has been stopped in Mexico by the Mexican authorities. They are not going to let these people go through the country, which is a smart move by Mexico in many ways, not just because President Trump told them this or told them that. I just think it's a smart move for Mexico going forward. Just a quick look back in history today. On this day in 1469, so that's 549 years ago, on this day, there was a very important marriage in Spain, the marriage of Ferdinand and Isabella. And they, of course, had quite an impact, not just on Spain, but Christopher Columbus, a few other things that they had their hands in. So happy number 549 for Ferdinand and Isabella. So there you have it, George. Let me say hello to my friend George. How are you, George?
Doing good. Actually, a little bit under the weather. I've got my allergies acting up, but I'm doing all right.
Okay, well, good to have you. It's great that you're joining us. I couldn't do my math correctly there. 1469, that's 549 years ago. So that's a long time to celebrate an anniversary, but this was a consequential couple, Ferdinand and Isabella. I'll say that much.
Boy, did they, yeah. And, I mean, the impact of their marriage was, you know, worldwide. People, you know, historical and worldwide, that's for sure.
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. You got, of course, Christopher Columbus. But there was more than that. They're the ones who
They unified Spain, first of all.
That's right.
Which in turn led to the Age of Discovery directly. Because once it was unified, then you know they could turn their eyes to the rest of the world, to commerce and everything else. And I mean, it just really, really opened up a new era in world history. Plus, at the same time, in my opinion, it had such a lasting impact on history.
No, absolutely.
Because it brought the new world into contact with the old world,
absolutely,
or vice versa,
no, this,
depending on how you look at it.
Sure, this was a consequential union, to say the least. Well, we got a couple of topics we're going to get into today. The debate down in San Antonio. We're also going to talk about the march. Let's get started with that, the march, because I think there's some big news that came out of Mexico today, that Mexico has at least opted for not letting them in.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good move on Mexico's part for many reasons, not just because of President Trump. I think in their own self-interest, I think this is a very good move, George.
I think so, too. I think that, you know, I think that, well, that one of the things that, Mexican authorities were complaining about was that the last big march ended up with a lot of people who were not able to cross immediately having to stay in Tijuana and in other places. And they created a big nuisance for Mexican authorities on their side. So, you know, it wasn't all this, you know, this situation where they thought that they were just going to walk in. And, you know, they were held up, and they are continuing to be held up. A lot of them still haven't crossed from that first journey. And so it was something that they had to consider, where they weren't going to put up with that. The other thing, of course, is that President Trump got very, very tough with Mexican authorities and told them, you know, they got to do their part on this immigration issue. I mean, after all, Mexico is supposed to have a wall of itself, of its own, on the Guatemala border. So, you know, if you got that kind of immigration barrier, then you should be doing something about people who are trying to actively come across in a manner which is a whole lot other than the legal and orthodox manner. It is, what we're looking at is, in my opinion, is a publicity stunt. It's an absolute publicity stunt. And it smacks of an effort to try to embarrass the United States.
That, and as someone said today, you know, the only beneficiary of this whole thing are the human smugglers, who in many cases are cartels, who are literally... you know, literally have taken charge of these things, and people have to pay them.
Yes.
And that's, I don't know. I mean, who wins? I mean, you know, Mexico doesn't win. The United States doesn't win when you have human smugglers profiting from this. There's also, I mean, you have to think about the fact they're going to have to go through, let's say they leave Honduras, they're going to have to go through Guatemala. They're going to have to go through Mexico. And I mean, I've never driven those roads, but I know people who have, and I know just from my own knowledge of geography, that's not exactly the kind of terrain you want to be walking. I mean, they're not going to be walking on grass, but they're just going to follow highways, I guess. But that's still very dangerous. I mean, if you know anything about Mexican country roads, there's a lot of traffic, there's a lot of trucks, you have a lot of buses, you have a lot of traffic, period. So you're exposing these people, once they're in Mexico, and I assume in Guatemala as well, to traffic. I mean, it's very dangerous, as well as, of course, the other problems of walking through open land and everything. So I think Mexico here, and again, I don't know officially what they have done other than they've apparently opened up a dialogue with the UN, and the UN is apparently going to be looking at their cases on a case-by-case basis to see who gets asylum. These people, I guess, are going to be contained in a particular area. The problem they had the last time is that this was not popular in Mexico itself, because, you know, you're blocking traffic, you're creating all
That's
kinds
right.
of problems.
That's exactly right. That's exactly
yeah,
right.
So it didn't go over real well with the Mexican population either. But I like the way President Trump has reacted to this, George.
I do too. I think, you know, you have to draw the line at some point and say you can't, you know, that these countries have got to respect the fact that we have boundaries, that we have laws, immigration laws, and that we have the right to determine who enters and who doesn't. This, you know, like I said, is, in my opinion, a publicity stunt. And it is it's designed to embarrass or provoke, put the United States in bad light. And you know, if these people were just fleeing, first of all, if they were fleeing violence, once they crossed into another country, that should have been it. You know, then they could claim asylum or or find safety in that aspect of it. But their ultimate goal is to come to the United States. And so when you you've got somebody that's got that ultimate goal, then I think that it changes from the idea of just asylum or safety to one where you actively want to come to a country. And if you actively want to come to a certain country, then you do it the proper way. You don't you know, you don't just do it helter skelter. The other thing that angers me, and it really really angers me, and I think you know you probably have the same feeling, is how often they compare this situation to, first of all, to black slaves that were brought to the United States in chains, as well as to the Cuban refugee situation that Cubans somehow received favorable treatment. Well, you know, it's absolute apples and oranges that they are comparing here. In that aspect of it, because it just doesn't, it is not the same thing. It's not slaves being forced to come, and these people are not fleeing tyrannical, evil governments, but rather failed governments. You know?
That's right. And in fact, you make a very good point there with the Cubans, because, you know, I often hear that from people. And the reality, though, is that if you look at the Cuban migration to the United States, with the exception of Mariel, which was, you know, clearly chaotic, no question about it, 100,000 people all of a sudden.
And it also was an effort by Castro to embarrass the United States.
Exactly, exactly. And so that was very, no question about it, that was 100,000 people in the course of a few weeks. And that was clearly chaotic, and it was a problem. Let's just put it that way. And I know for a fact that the Cuban government was told, "That's it. You don't do this again, because the next time, you know, it will our reaction will be very different." But the overwhelming majority of Cubans who came to the United States, whether it was the Freedom Flights, or whether it was like our family or others, we actually came in a very orderly fashion.
That's exactly right.
We may have had a special treatment in the sense that we were Cold War refugees, and being from the in the middle of the Cold War, we were given certain not privileges. That's not the right what I'm thinking of, but I mean some advantages, you might say. But that's because we were coming from a communist country, in much the same way that Russian Jews were given special treatment in the 1980s when Reagan was president. You may remember that.
Exactly.
The Hungarians in 1956, you know, the Czechoslovakians.
Right.
And that. So, I mean, these were special situations, but of the million Cubans or so who have left the island, probably more than a million, maybe like a million and a half, 95% of them actually left in a very orderly fashion. And it wasn't like this. These people are clearly
never like this.
No,
not at all.
And let me just say one thing, that I think what is really happening in these countries, and it's fascinating, because I think one of the leaders of the caravan was actually arrested by the government of Honduras or Guatemala, I believe, and because I think that, you know, there may be, I think there's a hand behind all of this. You know, somebody's got to be getting people water. Somebody's got to be getting them food. I mean, you don't walk that distance by yourself. I mean, somebody's got to be helping you. And I know the Mexican government has always had a very interesting view about people coming north. They don't mind it if it's Mexicans. But if it's anybody else, they don't like it. And that's because they don't want to get the reputation of being a country that is, in essence, a highway to come to the United States. They don't want that, because they know what will happen then. The country will be flooded with all kinds of refugees and even people that the Mexican government does not want in Mexico.
That's right.
It's a complicated thing. So so far, I think President Trump has acted correctly. And at least so far, it looks like Mexico is acting correctly as well. I just don't see how Mexico benefits by allowing these people to go through the country. I just don't think it's in their interest, George. But I think, you know, as I said before, I think so far so good for President Trump. Interesting on this topic, I wanted to bring something else before we get to to the debate, there was an article in The Hill indicating that the Democrats are basically being told by their people, do not talk about immigration.
Yes, I read that. Yep.
Did you see that? Yeah.
Yes.
And it's basically they're being told, look, it's just too controversial. Don't touch it. It's not something that, you know, we want to, you know, we want to be involved in. And I think what so I don't think this is going to be helping them one bit. I mean,
no.
this particular incident, this is not going to be helping them at all. And probably not the best of time for the Democrats. That is not the best of times for a march like this to be happening. Well, George, let's switch to our other topic, the whole question of the debate. It was in San Antonio, so you had lucky there in your hometown.
Yeah.
When did you find out you were going to go?
Late in the game, probably about 3 hours before it was supposed to happen. So I ran over there. And I actually had to do double time. I went over there to the first, I went half to the actual debate, and then the second half I went over to where the Republican Party was having its party to its watch party. And the reason I had to go over there was because there were a ton of foreign press representatives that were there from Ireland, from England, from Italy, all watching and listening, and with a great deal of interest. And several of them had contacted me that they wanted me to come over and give them some,
translate,
some comments. Yeah, to give
do
them
a little
comments.
Translation as well. Huh?
But let me tell you, you know, because we
sure.
just were talking about the caravan and immigration.
Mm-hmm.
One of the fascinating things to me was how Beto kept talking and harping about the issue of health care, universal
mm-hmm.
health care, and everybody's health care, and everybody's, you know, health is important, et cetera, et cetera. And that includes, and he included that a couple of times, I don't know if he was slipping or what, but he included in it a couple of times that immigrants, as he puts it,
mm-hmm.
also
mm-hmm.
deserve universal health care or health care coverage. And the moans, you know, were absolutely palatable. I'm fascinated that the media didn't jump on it and ask if,
mm-hmm.
you know, if that's what he meant. But I think that, you know, while they are busy running away from immigration, and embracing the issue of health care because somehow the Republicans want everybody to die, you know, the Republican candidates ought to tie them to health care for undocumented immigrants. Well, then, you know, if it's universal health care for everybody, is this what you mean?
Right.
And it would just be interesting to see how they would defend that.
Well, you know, I thought the most interesting question of the whole debate. There were many good questions. I thought the questions were very good, actually, by the two reporters.
Yes.
I thought they did a good job. I thought they both did a very good job.
Yes, I did.
The question from the lady reporter, the question she asked about Kavanaugh and Roe v. Wade, that in an incredibly smart way, Cruz turned around and made it into abortion, that he's pro-life and he's not. And I thought that was very clever of Cruz, because I think that's a problem for Robert O'Rourke, Beto. I think that's a problem for him in South Texas.
Yes,
you know, this is
it
not
is.
You
it
know,
is.
I've always said the Democrats have two speeches in Texas, one north of San Antonio or north of Austin, and then the other one in South Texas. And in South Texas, they don't talk about abortion. And I think that the fact that this lady brought this up and then Ted Cruz was able to make that point, I thought that was, for me, one of the better points of the whole night. Now, I didn't think, honestly, that there was no knockout. If I could use a boxing analogy, there was no knockout. Nobody got knocked out or nobody – suffered a major defeat. But I think Cruz won the debate for two reasons. Number one, time is on his side. I mean, every day that goes by, O'Rourke is fighting the clock, and the clock, as you know, is tough when you get late in the race and you're down. And the other thing is that I think that Cruz has effectively turned this into a debate about issues, and that helps Cruz as well, Bob, George.
Oh, definitely. You know, I think everything it all played very, very well. I think the optics of it, though, that's where Cruz really, really won, because he came across like a mature statesman, and O'Rourke certainly came across as an amateur, as a young whippersnapper, as someone who was talking platitudes. And, you know, the issues, he didn't really, you know, he seemed to want to play on emotions. And that was so mm-hmm. evident when he started talking about the blind squirrel. I mean, that was just incredible.
Right.
You know, I think that he really, really, if he intended to help himself, I think he... I could feel a lot of people's eyes rolling on that one.
Yeah.
You know, he was trying to go for the emotion, and you know, it might work with some folks, but it certainly doesn't work with adults.
Right. Well, I think that, you know, the good news and bad news for Beto is, the good news is that he's had a lot of very friendly crowds. And that means that you get to say a lot of what these people want to
exactly.
hear, which
exactly.
is a lot of these platitudes.
Exactly.
The bad news is that he hasn't really been challenged too many times. And, you know, he hasn't really opened himself up for a lot of press coverage, press conferences. If he had had a more difficult primary, I think this would have made him into a stronger candidate. So really... he's been running around week after week after week doing these mass rallies where he's basically just telling people what they want to hear.
Right.
And all of a sudden now he's in front of Ted Cruz, who's very effective. And then, of course, you know, Cruz can tear him up a little bit on things like, how are you going to pay for health care? You know, he couldn't answer
right,
that.
Right,
I mean,
right.
that was really a remarkable part of the – of the debate. Well, the last I checked, he was up. Cruz was up 7, 8, or 9. Have you seen anything different?
No, but I think that that's well, that's good. I think that it's not really accurate. I think Cruz is going to win by a lot more than that.
Well, I agree with you. I think Cruz is going to win by 10 points. I agree with you there. I've been
mm-hmm.
saying that all the way. Now, let me bring up another point. I have a post about this tomorrow. I wanted to ask you about this because I've been reading about this. I may have sent you a copy of this article as well. And that is, Democrats complaining that Beto is not sharing the wealth. And that, you know, Democrats are saying, hey, you know, hey,
yeah.
how about a little help? And, you know, it's interesting. I can understand Beto not sending money to other states. I understand that, you know. Maybe he should, maybe he shouldn't, but I'll cut him a little slack on that. But what I don't understand, why is he not helping some of the other Democrats? For example, he hasn't done anything with Lupe Valdez, hasn't done anything with the lieutenant governor.
Right.
I mean, he hasn't done anything with anybody. And these other, you know, these other people could benefit from the crowds, the exposure, and the media coverage that would come from being on the same stage as Beto. So I find that, I don't know if it's troubling. I just think it's interesting, but it doesn't seem he's making a lot of friends with Democrats. I don't know. Maybe that's my sense. How do you feel about that, George?
I agree. I think, you know, I was kind of amused at the quickness, because there was a video online that I watched how quickly he responded when he was asked by I can't remember the reporter from which. You know, from where they were from, but when he asked, the reporter asked him, if, you know, he was going to share
mm-hmm.
some of the $38 million that he's gotten, if he's going to share it with some of the other candidates, and his response was, I mean, he didn't even blink an eye. He said, "No,
Mm-hmm. Well, what he said, and yeah, the quote that I saw, George, maybe it's the same one, but the quote that I saw, he basically said, look, I owe this to the people who donated to my campaign. He basically saying, look, they donated to my campaign.
It's their money. It, yeah, right.
Yeah, it's kind of, you know, kind of saying, hey, you know, they're donating to my campaign.
They gave me the money, and I'm going to use it.
Exactly. They gave me the money, and I'm doing this for them, kind of.
Yeah, right, exactly.
You know, in a sense, I can understand, but he can still, my point is, he could still help some of the other Democrats.
He could show up. Well, see, if he doesn't want to share the money, he could certainly share the stage. He could share the venues, and he's not. He's not.
I mean, I'm not saying he's got to do it every day.
There are many creative ways. I mean, he's supposed to be the darling of the Democratic Party here in Texas, mm-hmm. right? So,
well, that's what they tell us. Yeah.
Well, that's what I've heard. I mean, I don't know. So, so he could certainly be at an event and have Lupe there, or at these debates, he certainly could have had the local Democrats that are running for Congress here in South Texas. None of them were there. You know, he could have certainly had Joaquin and Julian there at least, the mm-hmm. Castro twins. But nope, they weren't there either.
That's interesting. I didn't realize that those local politicians were not there. That's
yeah.
I'm sure there was room for them. I'm sure they could have found a couple of chairs.
If there was room for me.
That's it. I mean, they could have found room for people like that. Well, George, we've had a lot of rain here for several days, and temperatures even some mornings in the mid 40s. What's it like down there?
Yeah, well, that's why I'm a little hoarse because we've had some rain. And very cold. I mean, by our standards, very cold. It was down in the 40s the other night, and on Monday, we had the cold front blew through,
mm-hmm.
and I've been walking Teddy in early morning, and it's been nippy.
Yeah,
not
it has been.
Wet.
It has been.
Not
well, the wet,
wet
part is the part that is a bit of a problem if you like to go out and do a little exercise and walk around a little bit. But the chilly part is also interesting. Well, George, get well.
It's climate change, so I've decided
it's climate change. What else could it be? Well, let's hope that the Astros have another victory this year in their pockets.
Yes.
And let's hope they win today.
Let's
play tonight. They're playing, exactly. Let's hope they win and they can take it to Fenway Park and maybe win three in a row and get back in the World Series. That would be a lot of fun, George.
That would be great to watch.
That's right. Well, thank you again, George. Thanks for joining us on short notice, and it's always a real treat to chat with you.
You got it, buddy. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much. Our good friend George Rodriguez, who actually went to the debate, he actually was in the debate with Beto and with Ted Cruz, and very interesting. I mean, this article, I have a post coming out tomorrow. I hope you check it out. I have a post coming out tomorrow, and I'm talking about this little, it's not a major, major problem, but when a magazine or a website magazine like The Hill writes about this, well, that means that, you know, they're talking about it more than in Texas. And basically the issue is a lot of Democrats are saying, hey, share some of the wealth with us. You know, we could use the money as well. And Beto, as we just learned, is basically saying no. And now, look, I understand, you know, people donate to him. He wants to spend the money campaigning. I get that. But he really doesn't have to spend money. He doesn't have to share the wealth in the sense of giving candidates money. He could share the wealth in the sense of campaigning with them or inviting them to some of his meetings or rallies or whatever, and that apparently is not happening at all. Well, thank you for listening, folks. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. Again, our thanks to George Rodriguez, and we will talk to you later.